Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, ever wonder what our first president, President George Washington, the first Congress, our founding fathers perhaps would say about the cornerstone policies of our 45th president, Donald Trump, and his promise and his goal to make America great again? I have wondered that. And so today we're going to talk about that with the help of David Barton, historian, author, and leading authority on our founding fathers. And we're going to consult with our founding fathers with the help of David and look at two key components of making America great again. And these are the issues, that of vetting immigrants to America, and the other is building the wall on the border as a necessary piece of protecting our people and keeping us as a nation, a nation. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr, and I'll be joined today by Dr. Gary Dahl. David Kistler is away from us today. And of course, then our special guest, personal friend, and friend of all of those who love liberty, David Barton, president of Wall Builders. David, welcome to Stand in the Gap today.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a thrill to have you, David. We have a lot to go over. You talk fast, so I knew we're going to be able to get a lot done. So we'll charge right into it. Dave, President Trump has made popular the phrase, as we all know, make America great again. And from the building of the wall to now permitting the pipeline, to canceling the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to stopping the immigration process for unvetted immigrants, to threatening to slap tariffs on certain imported goods, to calling Islamic terrorists dirty, sneaky rats, all kinds of things. David, this has been one fantastically full week in Washington. Many people, they think it's extreme. To others, they say, wow, this is overdue good news. But I'd like to go into one thing that the president said last night in an interview with Sean Hannity. And this one had to deal with the matter of extreme vetting in regard to immigrants. I want to play the short clip, and I want to come back and ask you what you think President George Washington and her founders would have thought or said about controlling immigration, and if they would have agreed with the concept of extreme vetting. Can you play the clip, Russ?
Talk a little bit about the executive orders on Syria, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, and 120 ban. That goes to the promise of extreme vetting.
Totally extreme. Explain. And beyond just those countries, we're going to have extreme vetting. We're going to have extreme vetting for people coming in to our country. And if we think there's a problem, it's not going to be so easy for people to come in anymore. You look at what's gone on. I mean, we could just go one after another, but then you go to other countries and you look at Nice, and you look at different places all over Europe, and you look at what's happening with Germany. It's a mess. The crime is incredible. And we're just not going to let that happen here.
Would it be gambling if at some point when there is a procedure in place, if you can't ascertain whether or not somebody's been radicalized or not, or if radical groups actually train some of their soldiers to say the right things to get in? But if you can't positively ascertain they're safe and find out what's in their heart, does that mean no go? You won't gamble?
Well, I tell you what, you use the right word, gamble. We don't want to have gambles. Our country has a lot of problems, well beyond this. And I found out a lot over the last week. I mean, we have serious difficulties. We don't need another difficulty. Right now, the FBI has over 1,000.
All right, Dave, we could have gone on, but you get the idea there. I'd like to ask you about that. What did George Washington and our founders think about immigration and controlling it, and what have they agreed with this concept of extreme vetting?
They were fairly open on immigration in one way. And let me say that back in the Declaration, one of the 27 grievances they had against King George III was that he was shutting down immigration. But immigration was also controlled. There was a process to it. And within that process, for example, when you get to the time of Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson talks about what is the federal government's role in immigration. And he said the federal government's role in immigration is to make sure that those that come to America are healthy and that they don't have any diseases, et cetera, But immigration was set by the states, not by the federal government. Because when you come to America, you don't live in the United States. You live in Pennsylvania, or you live in Texas, or you live in Florida, you live in Oregon. And so states are the ones that control so much immigration back in that period of time. And what you were looking for was someone who wanted to fit into what the nation was. And, you know, I hear Christians and pastors all the time say, well, you know, we have this thing in Leviticus that says, be kind to the stranger among you because you were once strangers in Egypt. And as my Hebrew rabbi tells me, he says, you Christians don't have a clue what that word means. That word is ger in Hebrew. And that means one who wants to come in and become one of you and conform to you and live according to your rules and laws. It's not somebody that just shows up at your border and say, I'm going to leave here. No, you have to say, I want to live according to your rules. I want to become one of you. I want to become a Jew, in other words. And that's a stranger. It's someone who was not born a Jew but wants to become a Jew. Okay, well, they weren't born Americans, but they want to become Americans. Well, we have too many here that don't want to become Americans. They want to come in here and continue their lifestyle and their culture, and they want to make us into them. And that's what our immigration was based on, was the biblical concept of come in and be part of us. I want to read you just a couple of sentences out of the 1919 immigration book. It was written by the chief of naturalization. And if you were coming to, and this is the end of World War One. So after World War One in Europe, you have this huge influx of immigration coming into America because of all the war. In 1941, they brought the book back out and reprinted it. And again, chief of naturalization, because at that time, you've now got Hitler starting to move across Germany. We're not in the war yet, but we're having this influx of immigrants coming in out of Poland and Czechoslovakia and elsewhere. And so here's what it says. You have to learn American history. You have to learn American government and culture, et cetera. And here's what they say about becoming an American. And this is the quote. This is the immigration policy after World War II. It says, an American is a man who is greater in his soul than in his class, creed, political party, or the section in which he lives. To be an American, a man must have an American soul and believe in the spiritual realities upon which America rests and out of which America was born. America was created to unite mankind by those passions which lift and not by the passions which separate and debase. We came to America to get rid of the things that divide and make sure of the things that unite. Now, there's nowhere close to that in our immigration policy today. And we're trying to make a culture, an American culture out of this, and spiritual realities of which we were founded. I mean, we're saying, hey, if you're a Christian coming out of Syria to persecute, we don't want you. But if you're a Muslim coming out of Syria, yeah, we're going to take you. We took 53 Christians in last year after declaring that a genocide. Only 53 Christians we allowed to enter the United States out of Syria. But we took tens of thousands of Syrian Muslims. I mean, it's crazy. And so that's what the founders would have said, because that's what our policy also was for the next 150 years after the founders.
Well, you know, you sort of answered two of the questions that I had, and we only have 10 seconds left. But I was going to ask you, David, where did that change of philosophy take place, where immigrants can be and can come into the United States and be as they want, rather than actually assimilating into our who we are, into our culture? But I think you have sort of answered that. Maybe you can comment on that again a little bit more after the break. Well,
Let's hold that, Gary and Dave. And when we come back, Dave, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get David to answer that specific question. And then we will move into the issue of the building of the wall and maintaining of a border. What our founders think about that? What did they say about that key issue, which is right front and center right now? You are listening to Stand in the Gap today, Sam Rohr and Gary Dahl, and our very special guest, David Barton, author, historian, president of Wall Builders. We'll be right back with the next phase. Stay with us.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
We, the people of the United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
The people are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. A quote from Thomas Jefferson.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. This is the first week of a new administration in Washington, D.C., following the inauguration last Friday of President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. They come into office facing significant challenges, promises of hope, vocal opposition, and enthusiastic support. None of us but God knows what is ahead, but we do know that Scripture encourages us to pray for those in authority. As one who works in the political realm and deals regularly with elected officials, I have observed firsthand the great temptations, challenges, and difficulties that these men and women and their families face on a daily basis. This reality has further confirmed to me the wisdom of God's command for us to pray for those in authority. Let's commit together to remember our new leaders in prayer. If you'd like more information on who represents you, go to the Citizen Action Center at pafamily.org. That's pafamily.org.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back today, and our special guest, David Barton, with Wall Builders. Well, David, you got to hear that that ad that played for the Founders Bible. Happened to be, what, assembled by David Barton. Are you the same guy?
Yeah, I am the same guy.
That's Dave, good. Dave, take just a minute, no more than a minute, because we got to go on with this other stuff. But what went in the putting together of that Founders Bible, that material that's there? I mean, is there any other place that you know of where that much material is assembled in one place? And why did you put it together with the Bible itself?
We own about 100,000 documents from before 1812. So I own thousands of the handwritten documents of Washington, Adams, Jefferson, etc. And since I've been a young kid, I've tried to read through the Bible cover to cover once a year. So as I read these founders' writings, I saw that they quoted the Bible time after time after time, but they didn't give chapter and verse because back then people, you didn't need to. You knew what it said. And so when Lockman Foundation wanted to come out with a reprint, and they said, would you do a commentary? I said, nah, you don't want my opinions, but I got somebody whose opinions would be really good. And we just quote source after source, Bible verse after Bible verse. We let the Founding Fathers explain it and how they use that verse to build part of the American culture. It's quite a fascinating book to show the relevancy of the Bible today, as well as to show how the Bible was the foundation of us becoming the nation that we are.
Well, David, you did a great job on that, and the what we're offering. is what you have put together. But that leather edition is just a fantastic research tool and tremendous thing. So thanks for that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, just a little bit of what David said right there, particularly for those who are listening to our stations in Pennsylvania, and particularly the mid part of the state. I want you to know that next Tuesday, David Barton is going to be here in Pennsylvania. He and I will be together. He's going to be speaking. I have the privilege of introducing him. But there is a public meeting that's going to be there at Williamsport, Pennsylvania, at the Community Arts Center in Williamsport. Now, you need tickets to go, but there is no charge for it. This is what you do. You go to makeamericaprayagain.eventbrite.com. makeamericaprayagain.eventbrite.com. You need to go there to sign up, but come and join us and listen to David as he's going to share some of those things that he's talking about, those 100,000 documents. I tell you, you will enjoy that night next Tuesday evening there at the Community Arts Center in Williamsport. Well, David, let me go back now to this other issue. I want you to finish, I guess, the question we started on the other side of the break. Gary asked you a question. When did it change from the view of immigrants where we were looking for people who wanted to come and be Americans to now, under these age, almost bringing in people who do not ever want to become Americans, but actually want to change America? When did that shift?
The seeds of that change began in education in the 1920s as progressives shifted the way we taught. Prior to that point in time, we taught about individuals. We did not look at groups. We looked at individuals. Every individual had God-given inalienable rights. Every item in the Bill of Rights is given to every individual. It's not given to groups. Today, the Supreme Court says the purpose of the Bill of Rights is to protect the minority from the majority. Now, how stupid is that? Because I'm in the majority as a white guy, do I not get the right to a trial by jury? Do I not get the right to have free speech? No, because I'm in the wrong group. And so what happens is even back in 1992 in a Supreme Court case I was involved with, the court at that time said they'd created classes of religions. And if you're in Christianity, that's the biggest religion, so we give you the least protection. But if you're in a small religion, we'll give you more protection than anyone else. No, no, no. Everybody gets the same protection because it's inalienable rights to every individual. Rights don't go to groups, they go to individuals. In the 1920s, the progressive step in education made four major changes, but one of which was they put us into age-graded education. We used to say, whatever you know, that's how we group you. So you could be 14 years old in the first grade, or you could be 12 years old in the eighth grade. But we started saying, no, 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 if you're 12 years old, we put all 12 years old together. And so it started the process of what we now know as identity politics. In D.C., we got to know whether you're straight or gay, whether you're union or right to work, or you're liberal or you're conservative, or you're moderate, or are you a senior, are you black, are you white, are you brown, or what are you? We don't know how to treat you until we know. And then we did that with the passing of the income tax. We don't treat everybody the same taxation-wise. Now we have five categories of taxation. We got to know which group you fit into before we know how to treat you. And so that's what we do with immigration now. It's a progressive view that we have to know your group. We have to know what your beliefs are. We have to know what group you're part of before we know how to treat you. And that's the product of something that was introduced in the 1920s as the progressives started taking government.
Excellent, Dave. Now, I'm going to go right now into we had a clip to play, but because of the time, I'm going to forego the clip. But the president last night was talking with Sean Hannity, and he talked about the issue of building the wall and the importance of it protecting the people and all of that. Let's go right now into this question. What would a President Washington and any of the founders have said about the importance of a border, the importance of a wall? Obviously, there wasn't a need for it back then, we know, but what would have they thought in matter of principle relative to this discussion today?
You know, I was at the inauguration in D.C., and a lot of the protesters there were on the immigration issue and the wall, et cetera. And the way I would go at it, and the way I think the founders would explain it best, is for somebody who says, we need an open border on immigration, my question would be, do you have locks on your house? Do you leave your keys in your car? And if they said no, I would say, why not? Do you think that belongs to you? I mean, why do you stop anyone from coming into your house? Don't you want everyone to share your house? Don't you want everyone to use your car? See, the concept of borders is private property. It goes back to a biblical concept in the book of Acts where it says that God lays out the lines of nations. Nations are their own private property. They have borders. God lays out those borders. And to say that there's open borders is the same as saying there's no locks on my house. I want anybody to come in and stay at my house. Well, even progressive liberals don't buy that. They want their house protected. Well, that's the same thing a border is. What it is this is our country. This is the country that we have, and we control this country according to these laws. And no, we are not global. We are distinct, separate nations. And so that's where the founders were, and that's why George Washington told us very seriously in his farewell address to avoid foreign entanglements. When you start bringing in all these foreign aspects, you lose your character and identity as Americans. He talked about how important it was to preserve the nature and character of an American, how distinct we were among the nations of the world, and that we were to maintain that distinctness. And that is a biblical concept. And so that's why everybody in the 12 tribes can tell you what tribe they're from. They maintain their distinctness, and they know their tribes. And we've got this progressive idea where that, no, we want everybody in groups. And by the way, we don't want any distinct identities out there. So with that, the individuality goes away, and that affects, again, your immigration as well.
Dave, I think that that's a very good explanation. And, of course, you brought in the matter of Acts chapter 17, which we have spoken a lot about here on this program as it relates to borders. And, of course, you know, as Donald Trump has said, a nation without borders is no nation at all. But beyond the idea of borders, what other characteristics of a nation did our founders understand and build within the framework of our Constitution? There are other issues that go along with what makes a nation, correct?
There are, and that nation has got to be founded on common beliefs, common purposes. That's why Washington talked about what it was to be an American, and then in his farewell address, he listed about a dozen different philosophical ideas that made America unique from other locations. He specifically pointed to Europe and said, do not let that philosophy come here because you'll no longer be Americans. And one of the things he pointed to specifically was in Europe, they think that you can be moral without religion. They think that education is capable of teaching morality. In America, we know that's not true. We know that you will not separate morality or religion from government or from public affairs and maintain a strong nation. And so it's those kind of beliefs that made us different. He was watching the French Revolution, all the other revolutions that were happening at the time. That was called the Age of Revolution. And they were all so enlightened that if you just teach the right thing, people will do the right thing. And he said, that's not true. We know that it takes faith in God to do the right thing. And then we also specifically taught the Declaration of Independence. We don't teach that today. We don't even teach the Constitution. But the founders believe you would never understand the Constitution if you didn't master the Declaration.
That's right.
So if you look in early law books, for the first 8 years of school in America, you were required to take a written exam for the first 8 years of school on four separate documents. You had the Constitution, you had the Declaration, you had the State Constitution, Washington's Farewell Address. If you mastered that, you had the American philosophy. And if you look at the Declaration, it starts with 155 words that set forth the entire philosophy of American government and six principles. And of those six principles, four of the six are absolutely God-centered. And if you don't get that right, you don't get the philosophy of government right. So that's what made us distinct, is unlike being a Jew or being a German or whatever, you're born there, therefore you are in America. You're an American because you adopt a certain philosophy. You can come from any country and to be an American if you'll become part of that philosophy. And so even back then, we recognized the distinctness that we were. We encouraged immigration as long as you came wanting to be part of this philosophy, wanting to fit in and contribute. We were open immigration to those people.
David, we only have just a little bit left here in this section, but the whole issue of the issue of sovereignty and what we see happening in Europe and the whole continent, make America great again. In your opinion, is this a good thing that we're witnessing, or is this a problematic thing that we're witnessing?
I think it's a good thing we're witnessing. I have talked to cab drivers in England for a long time, and I like cab drivers because they're more aware politically of what's going on, and they are so wanting their own character back as a nation. Open immigration there has filled their nation with people who want to destroy their nation. They like being a British nation, and that's their sovereignty and independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. Our special guest, David Barton of Wall Builders, Gary Dull and myself here. When we come back after this break, we're going to go to the issue of now a biblical worldview and challenges to it. What are those biblical principles that our founders embraced that we need to re-embrace today?
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu at the Anti-Abortion March for Life in Washington.
I'm deeply humbled to stand before you today.
Vice President Mike Pence, now the highest-ranking government official to address the crowd in person, telling them they've come to a historic moment in the cause for life.
He has a stellar record in the view of these folks here. He was the first congressman, as a congressman from Indiana, to introduce legislation to ban federal funding to Planned Parenthood. He has a 100% approval rating from the National Right to Life Committee.
Fox's Doug McElway. President Trump gets his first foreign leader visit at the White House. British Prime Minister Theresa May, and a move to tighten security on high-speed trains in Europe. Belgium sealing an agreement with France and the Netherlands to draw up passenger lists and introduce passport checks on some international rail services. Fox News, we report, you decide.
WFYL. History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
President Woodrow Wilson issued a proclamation stating, "Whereas in the various countries now engaged in war, there are 9 million of Jews, the great majority of whom are destitute of food, shelter, and clothing, driven from their homes without warning, causing starvation, disease, and untold suffering. And whereas the people of the United States have learned of this terrible plight, I, Woodrow Wilson, do proclaim January 27, 1916, as a day upon which to make contributions for the aid of the stricken Jewish people. Contributions may be addressed to the American Red Cross."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap today.
Well, welcome back to Stand in the Gap today. Sam Rohr, Gary Dull, and our special guest today, David Barton. Dave, I want to continue now in this vein of looking at our founding fathers, what they would have thought, and how they would approach the concept of Make America Great Again. We've talked on the aspect of immigration. We've talked and we just dealt with the issue of borders and common beliefs and language, that kind of thing, what makes a nation a nation. But our founders really understood, as you said, there were six principles. They didn't talk about Bible verses all the time because people had a very broad understanding of biblical principles. Yet today, I think we're pretty sparse on understanding of biblical principles. I'd like you, if
totally
you could.
Agree.
Yeah, I mean, I know you do, Dave, and you do a lot of speaking on it. I would like you to explain, if you could, identify what you would say would be the most, I guess, essential elements of biblical principles, biblical worldview. Tie these things together, if you could, and lay this out so our folks have an understanding of what it really rests upon. You know what I'm saying? Just charge into this because you can speak hours, but I don't have hours, so go ahead.
Right. The biblical worldview really stems from knowing the Bible. You can't think Bible if you don't know Bible, and that's the biggest problem we have right now. Of Christians in America, only 14% read the Bible on a daily basis. If you don't know what's in the book, you can't act like what's in the book. And so polling shows that only about 9% of American Christians actually think according to what the Bible says, because we don't know what's in there. And we are presumptuous, and we think, well, this is what I think, and I'm a Christian, therefore that's what God thinks too. No, that's not necessarily true at all. And so in many areas, we don't recognize it. And this is one of the interesting things that I deal with on professors and others, is they say, well, the founding fathers are atheists, agnostics, and deists, and they didn't talk about God. And in their culture, they started reading the Bible in schools, and they read it from cover to cover, generally once a year. They knew it so well that they didn't have to tell each other that they were quoting from particular Bible verses. Everybody recognized it because everybody read that book thoroughly. And so in their rhetoric now, I love to take speeches of founding fathers and show it to pastors and say, pastors, how many Bible verses do you recognize? And usually they can only see about one-fourth of the Bible verses the founder actually quoted in that speech. And these are pastors. And these are, now we're talking about political leaders who quote the Bible four times more often than pastors do. So the concept of having the biblical worldview, we don't focus on it today. As a matter of fact, it's one of the interesting things that I'm doing a piece right now analyzing John Locke's work that was used to write the Declaration. And if I used the phrase nursing fathers, you'd go, what? It's mothers that nurse. That's not nursing. That is the most common phrase used in the sermons of the founding era because that comes out of two Bible verses, and it says that your civil governors are to be nursing fathers. In other words, they're to have the same nurture and care of people that mothers have for their children. The civil leaders are to do that for them. So nursing fathers, no Christian would get that today if they saw that. And yet the founders had sermon after sermon after sermon on that, and the founders themselves write letters about that. But what you will not find back in their generation is John 3:16. That was not a verse they talked about. Not that they didn't know it, but today that's the only verse that, you know, we hang that in the end zones. So our biblical literacy is so much reduced from what previous generations had. And I love even using Ben Franklin, the least religious founding father, quotes the Bible much more often than any minister I know today. And so until we get back to that type of thinking, we will never understand that the Bill of Attainder clause in the Constitution comes out of Ezekiel 18, nor that the treason clause comes out of Deuteronomy 17, nor all the other parts of the Constitution come out of the Bible. And if you don't understand that, you can't use it the way it's designed, and you'll never get the maximum benefit that they intended.
Dave, I want a quick follow-up before Gary gets a question here to you. Today, for instance, as we speak, there is a pro-life rally going on. Vice President Pence was speaking during this last break. He was speaking and addressing the folks there in Washington, the matter of life. When I hear the word life, I look right directly to the beginning of our Declaration of Independence, where we are endowed by our Creator with life and liberty. Now, tie that together with the understanding of biblical principles, biblical worldview. And is it possible for anybody to really understand the Declaration of Independence or really understand the Constitution if they don't have a grasp of certain biblical principles?
Not really. And even as you talk about life, people say, well, that just means life in general. You know, you have the right to enjoy your life. No. That dealt with abortion. We have the specific writings of the Founding Fathers dealing with abortion. James Wilson, who was a signer of the Declaration and the Constitution, helped draft that document. He was part of that Congress who did that. He signed that document. He created the first law book in America, first law school in America, and he specifically says that life begins as soon as the infant is able to stir in the womb. And at that point in time, the common law protects that life in the womb. That's the role of government. And he talks about abortion. You see, all that's changed with abortion is that we change our technology. The issue is not new. They dealt with the issue back then. The reason they dealt with it was even 3,000 years before that, God dealt with it in his laws in the Bible, telling you what you cannot do with unborn children in the womb in the way of damage and killing, etc. So abortion's been there since the beginning of time. And so when the Declaration talks about that, yes, we are talking abortion.
Now, what happens is progressives always, and I've got letters from congressmen, and you say, a great example is Roe v. Wade came down, and people said, wait, the Declaration says there's a right to life. Congressman, head of Judiciary Committee, 52 years in Congress, Democrat, writes back and says, no, in Congress, we take an oath to uphold the Constitution, not the Declaration. Constitution says nothing about life, and that's what we swear to uphold.
Mm.
Hey, Bubba, you don't know what you're talking about. Article 7 of the Constitution incorporates the Declaration fully. You're supposed to be upholding both according to the Constitution. But in anti-slavery days, we say, hey, there's a right to liberty. And the Democrats at that time said, no, that's the Declaration. We don't do the Declaration. We do the Constitution. And there's no right to liberty in the Constitution. Well, you're not supposed to separate the two. And today we say, wait a minute, natural marriage, it's a man and a woman. That's a law of nature. Oh, wait a minute, law of nature is in the Declaration. We don't do the Declaration. We just do the Constitution. So what happens is progressives want to shut out all the values and then reinterpret the documents without any values, and they impose their own values in it. And that's where you get this activist judiciary that comes up with all these new beliefs, is because they want to reject the biblical values that are inherent to those documents and create and replace their own values in those places.
You know, David, I've been appalled here just in recent days since Donald Trump has been in the White House, how many times I've heard a congressman or a senator make some sort of a statement that is far, far, far detached from the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I don't think that they know either one of those documents very, very well. And they just go ahead and they opine and they speak forth these things, and they have no constitutional foundation or no foundation in the Declaration to speak those things. It's like we have a whole group of, I don't like to use this word, but imbeciles sometimes in government in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, let me give you a perspective on that. And first off, we have, and I had to be careful, but I'm going to repeat your word, we have imbeciles in America. Only one out of 1,000 Americans, one out of every 1,000 Americans can name the five freedoms in the First Amendment. Now, that's freedom of free exercise of religion. Only one out of 1,000 can name the five freedoms there. But 19% of Americans say that the right to own a pet is guaranteed by the First Amendment. It's nowhere in there. We don't have a clue what that document says. Now, here's the deal. We talked about immigration earlier. Our standard had been that if you come to America, you've been in the South Pole your whole life. You didn't even know America existed. You came north, you liked this place, you said, I want to live here. And we said, well, if you want to live here, you have to go to school for 3 months and learn about our government, learn about our history, take an immigration test. If you can pass that, you can live here. And so to pass that test, 91% of immigrants passed that test. We consider that to be the baseline of what you need to know to be a citizen. 91% of immigrants pass it. The Intercollegiate Studies Institute went through and took the 13 most basic questions off the test and gave them to Americans who have spent their entire life in America, who have gone through 12 years of American education. 71% of Americans could not answer the 13 most basic questions on the immigration test. But grab this. They gave those 13 questions to elected officials, and 78% of elected officials could not answer the 13 most basic questions on the 48% of elected officials could not name the three branches of government.
That
is
sad. And again, I ask the question, David, when did that begin to happen? I mean, is that just in our generation, or does that go back several generations when we have started to see an ignorant citizenry in the United States?
I talked earlier about how one of the changes progressive brought in the 1920s when they reshaped public education was they got us into group thinking. What they also did was they told us that we don't need to learn how to think, we need to learn how to learn. And so the emphasis, we used to teach students how to think, now we taught them how to learn, and what that means is the teacher is the focal point of all knowledge. You take what the teacher says and repeat it back. So in the 1920s is when we first introduced multiple choice and fill-in-the-blank and true-false tests, because that's designed to let you parrot back what the teacher taught you, which makes it very easy to indoctrinate. Prior to that, you had to know the subject. You read the original documents. You studied those documents. You did what were called forensics and catechisms on the documents. They're all designed to teach you how to think independently. But what happened was in the 20s, the progressives go, we are the source of all knowledge. We want you to repeat back what we tell you. And so what happens is they no longer use original source documents in what they do. We will tell you that the First Amendment guarantees a separation of church and state. You know, when I read that document, I can't find that anywhere. Oh, no. Believe us. We're the teachers. We know what we're saying.
And so since the 1920s, that's where it's really changed, and that's why we no longer know the documents.
Well, David, I tell you, that's excellent, excellent material. And when we come back, obviously, we're going to talk about how to fix some of this, because in reality, there's a disconnect. What you're talking about, we have people who think they know who don't know anything. And we have people who are supposed to be telling the truth and teaching, pulpits, schools, well, right? And they're evidently not doing it either. We're going to talk about solutions to this issue when we come back right after this break, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to Stand in the Gap today. Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, special guest, David Barton.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
President Woodrow Wilson issued a proclamation stating, "Whereas in the various countries now engaged in war, there are 9 million of Jews, the great majority of whom are destitute of food, shelter, and clothing, driven from their homes without warning, causing starvation, disease, and untold suffering, and whereas the people of the United States have learned of this terrible plight, I, Woodrow Wilson, do proclaim January 27, 1916, as a day upon which to make contributions for the aid of the stricken Jewish people. Contributions may be addressed to the American Red Cross."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
On December 23rd of last year, the United Nations adopted a resolution condemning Israel and seeking to divide the city of Jerusalem. This brazen action was not only aggressively anti-Semitic, it was an affront to the God of heaven. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr with the American Pastors Network and another timely Stand in the Gap Minute. God Himself warned against such actions in Zechariah chapter 12, where God said that in the end days, He would make Jerusalem a cup of trembling and a very heavy stone for all peoples. He said that every nation that picked up that stone would be cut in pieces. You see, Jerusalem is God's city. Israel is His nation. The Jews are His people, and the lands around Israel are theirs forever. In modern language, God said, "Jerusalem is my city. Keep your fingers off or else." The American Pastors Network, pastors preaching the truth, equipping people to impact the culture for Christ. Visit us at AmericaPastorsNetwork.net to find out how you can help.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today and our special guest, David Barton. And this announcement again now for all of those who are listening to stations that carry this program in Pennsylvania, that David Barton is going to be here January 31st, Tuesday of next week, making a tour. One of the places that you can go is in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, to hear a whole lot more of what he's going to say than what you've heard on this program, which has been an awful lot. This is where you need to go. It's going to be at Williamsport at the Community Arts Center. That is on 220 West 4th Street, Williamsport, Pennsylvania. You do need tickets to go, but they are free. This is what you do. You go to makeamericaprayagain.eventbrite.com. That's a website. makeamericaprayagain.eventbrite.com. You can sign up. There will be room. But go listen to David next Tuesday, January 23rd. And David, I'm going to be there with you. It's going to be my privilege to introduce you when you speak. And it will be, in fact, a privilege, but I know people are excited about you being there. Now, as we wrap up the program today, we've covered a lot of ground. We were talking most recently about biblical principles, a biblical worldview. You were talking about how progressive education has really changed the whole process of what ought to be education, taking it from thinking to learning and rote type of thing. You went into that. But, David, the pulpits of America played a critical, critical role in teaching and laying out fundamental biblical principles. Speak to this issue a little bit from the standpoint of what we need to do, what America needs to do now in order to reacquaint ourselves with these biblical principles and biblical worldview that, as you said so clearly, at one point were so commonly understood that people didn't have to give the biblical quotes for them all the time because people understood that. Where do we start right now in this country with where we are right now?
One of the things we can do is study some of the old things. And one of the things that we've done at Wall Builders is we put up about 300 old sermons from the founding era and from the first and second great awakenings online for people and hopefully pastors to read. Because today in this age and culture, we kind of think that the Bible is limited toward just getting people converted. And it wasn't. And Jesus was all about making disciples of all men. The Great Commission didn't say go get them converted. It said make disciples of them. All right, that means we have to cover Matthew 19, the extensive teaching he gave on no-fault divorce. When was the last time any pastors hit a no-fault divorce sermon? That also means covering Matthew 20 and the teaching that covers what we call minimum wage and what the government's supposed to do with wages, what it's not supposed to do. That also involves Luke 19 and what we call the capital gains tax, where that Jesus lays out very clearly that if someone makes a profit, you reward them. You don't penalize them. You penalize the folks who are not productive. We get that exactly wrong in policy. We can see what Jesus taught in John 8 about the right to confront your accuser. That confrontation clause is what we call it. Historical commentaries and current commentaries today all point to the fact that that part of the Bill of Rights came out of Jesus' teaching in John 8. I don't think I've ever heard a sermon on any of those four topics, and yet historically we did. And so pastors need to go back and say, you know what, guys? The Bible has a whole lot more to say than just how to say the sinner's prayer, which isn't even in the Bible. And so that's part of the reshaping is getting Christian leaders to reshape the way they look at it. I'm part of a group where we'll call between 500 and 600 churches every day asking them questions. And we ask them questions, and from that we can tell if they're Bible-believing churches or not. So currently out of 344,000 senior pastors in America, only 28% of current pastors believe the Bible. Then when you ask
David, I'm going to interrupt you again. You made an astounding statement. Please repeat that statement so our listeners can hear that.
Out of 344,000 senior pastors in America, only 28% say they agree with and believe the Bible. So three out of four churches have leaders who do not agree with or do not believe the Bible.
And David, let me just throw this in too. You've got us going here. But that doesn't even mean that they believe in the authority of the Scripture. Believing in the Bible does not mean the same thing as having a biblical worldview, does it?
Oh, well, what we find is that among that group that say they believe the Bible, less than half of them have a biblical worldview.
That's the point.
So, and actually, with that group, when we ask that group of what we'll call them Bible-believing pastors, because that's what they think they are. They believe the Bible. Those who say the Bible is where they take their marching orders, when we ask that group, how do you know whether your church is successful or not? How do you measure success at your church? The top five answers, not a single one of them comes out of the Bible. They measure whether their church is successful on how much money comes into the offering, how many people are filling the seats on Sunday morning, how much staff they have, how much square footage is under roof, and how many programs they offer. I don't think I remember Jesus being concerned about any of those five. With this, as a matter of fact, it was just the opposite in John 6. He had huge crowds, but then he offended them all, and they all left. And turned to the disciples and said, you guys going to leave too? And said, no, you got the words of truth. We'll hang with you. Jesus was all the time offending people, not because he tried to, but because he always told the truth. Mm-hmm. But they would come back. He'd get huge crowds, and then he'd make them all mad again, and they'd leave. And said, guys, you know. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like my church.
Exactly. And that's what, if you're not offending people, you're not telling the truth, because that's where growth comes from, is having to challenge those things. And so the paradigm in America, even among Bible-believing pastors right now, is they have been told by seminaries that you shouldn't be offending people. You want to bring peace. Please show me the Bible references for that. I would love to see the Bible. But see, we buy into this, and that's why we try to send people back to read those old sermons. Because it will revolutionize what a pastor should do when you see that old stuff.
So, David, so here is a quick question. We got a couple minutes left, and I'm going to have you pray here at the end. However, we've talked about it on this program from the standpoint of making America great again is a great goal. We actually started this program about it, and we talked about a couple of the items of immigration and borders control. Those are important for making a nation a nation. But in reality, David, can our nation ever really be great again without a renewed pulpit in America?
Yes, it can be without a renewed pulpit, but not without a renewed spirit. I'll point out that the Great Awakening that we talk about as having saved America occurred outside the church. The pastors refused to go along with it. They would not let Whitfield come into their churches to preach. That's why so much of the Great Awakening happened in outside meetings. The church didn't want to be part of it. So it cannot happen without a spiritual renewal, and it would be really nice if pastors wanted to be part of that. It can happen without them, and it has happened without them before the First and Second Great Awakening. Some pastors participated. Most refused to get involved. So the answer is yes. Without the church, it can happen. That's not the preferable way. God would rather have his shepherds involved. But it cannot happen without God, and that's what it's going to take to make America great again, which means every individual citizen.
And, David, with that, I'm going to ask you to pray for our pastors, pray for our nation here in these remaining moments of the program. We close the program in prayer. I'd like for you to be able to do that for us. Would you do it, please?
You bet. Father, thanks for the nation you've given us and blessings we enjoy that we don't even know where they came from. And help us to learn the source of those blessings. Help us to learn what we can do to be good stewards of what you've given us so we can preserve those blessings. Because it's not just for us. It's for the rest of the world. The rest of the world is blessed when America is strong. We send help to places that would never get it without that. So help us to be good stewards here and help our pastors to relearn their responsibility, to relearn their purpose, to not be hirelings, but to be shepherds, and to speak with that clarion voice of boldness that your leaders always used through the scriptures. And help all of us as believers to know those scriptures and to get back into your word and even to commit to reading that once every year, which used to be our tradition in America. Just help us to know you and your word so that we can see the power that comes from knowing that word and change this nation, change the world, in Jesus' name.
Amen. Thank you, David Barton. For those who want to know, go to wallbuilders.com for lots of information about David Barton and his organization.
With Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission.
A popular government without popular information or the means of acquiring it is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives. A quote from James Madison.
Live from beautiful West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180.